Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning is from Canto 3, Chapter 2, Texts 16 and 17. And we're continuing with Uddhava speaking. The audience is Vidura. Vidura has asked, how is Krishna? How is Balaram? Because he's found Uddhava in a forest by the bank of the river Jamuna after hearing extensively from Krishna on many transcendental subject matters. And Uddhava is expressing his profound remembrance of Krishna. Krishna has just left. Think of the state that somebody's in, someone that's very dear to someone, and they just left. You know, in our normal way of speaking, they died. Of course, Krishna doesn't die. But Krishna just left. So his heart is filled with grief. But at the same time, Uddhava is very learned. So he knows Krishna hasn't died. He knows where Krishna is. Krishna's in the spiritual world. And Uddhava has access to Krishna in the spiritual world. He's that elevated of a Vaishnava. At the same time, though it goes back and forth, at the same time, he has these profound feelings. And what this morning's two verses are going to describe is not he starts to shift his focus to Krishna from Krishna's departure to the apparently contradictory features of Krishna's pastimes. Like starting from what he's done already, Krishna is unborn and he takes birth. Or Krishna is all powerful, but he flees from Kaliyavana. And, you know, for us, and so forth, we're going to hear some more. For us, it's delightful. Krishna's amazing. And for Uddhava, it brings him great distress. So, we're going into Uddhava's heart, and he's inviting us in, and we'll try to enter. Text 16. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in a prison house, of Vasudev, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Vraja and lived there incognito out of fear of the enemy, Krishna, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. I'll read the next verse because it's the same mood. Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents for their, Krishna and Balaram's, inability to serve their feet due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa. He said, "Oh mother, oh father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart. So that's Uddhava's heart. So let's hear how Prabhupada describes Uddhava's heart. Because Lord Sri Krishna is the original person from whom everything and everyone has emanated, aham sarvasya prabhavo, janmadhyasa yataha, nothing can be equal to or greater than him. The Lord is supremely perfect. And whenever he enacts his transcendental pastimes as a son, a rival, or an object of enmity, he plays the part so perfectly that even pure devotees like Uddhava are bewildered. So now we're going back to, or he's expanding upon the idea that he previously expressed of Yogamaya. He who was unborn appeared by his Yogamaya potency. We spoke about that twice yesterday. So now he's taking that Yogamaya potency and expanding it, that by the influence of Yogamaya potency, even Uddhava knows perfectly well he's bewildered. Again, you know, if he's the supreme powerful person, he can do whatever he likes. He can do whatever he likes. So he likes fleeing from Kaliyavana and bringing him into the cave of Muchukunda and Muchukunda crisping him to a piece of ashes. Well, he doesn't have to touch that Kaliyavana. And Muchukunda can have some service. And he can be face to face with Muchukunda. So he's accomplishing many things. Krishna is wonderful. But it's striking Uddhava's heart. It gives him distress. Uddhava, who knows perfectly well, becomes bewildered. This is Yogamaya. Although he knows perfectly well, he's bewildered. Prabhupada goes on. For example, Uddhava knew perfectly well that Lord Krishna is eternally existent and can neither die nor disappear, yet he lamented for Krishna. All these events are perfect arrangements to give perfection to his supreme glories. So, Krishna can move freely between these two realms, disclosing his identity, concealing his identity. Just like that. He didn't even have to do anything. Just his Yogamaya potency, it covers Uddhava. His Yogamaya potency is withdrawn. Here I am. His Yogamaya potency covers Uddhava. His Yogamaya potency is withdrawn. It covers Uddhava. Just like effortlessly. And this is part of Krishna's supremely powerful position. His potencies act however he likes. And he likes variety. Here I am, now you can't see me. And this knowledgeable Uddhava, vastly learned Uddhava, his heart is pained. My Lord, he flees from Kamsa in fear. Hides himself incognito because wicked, but he's not afraid of Kamsa at all. Not at all. But it appears that he's afraid of Krishna, afraid of Kamsa. Which, Prabhupada is pointing out, this adds to the perfection of the glories of Krishna. And then he adds another. And aside from Krishna expanding his glories, it's all for enjoyment's sake. So it's both. Krishna is expanding his glories, and Krishna is enjoying. And Krishna is bringing varieties of enjoyment to his devotee, who is intensifying his feelings for Krishna out of these feelings of distress for Krishna and about Krishna. So it's not at all bland or stereotyped or cookie cutter or Krishna can only do this and Krishna can't do that. Well, Krishna has no restriction and he freely moves in any realm as he wishes. Now then he gives an example. When a father plays with his little son and the father lies down on the floor as if defeated by the son, it is just to give the little son pleasure and nothing more. But at the same time, the father lying on the floor is deriving pleasure, playing with his son. It's for the pleasure of the son that he's deriving pleasure. Just yesterday I was hearing Prabhupada speaking about Lord, he pronounced it Gladstone, who was the prime minister under some British queen. Which one?
Victoria.
So, under Queen Victoria, Lord Gladstone was the prime minister. Oh, Victoria is a, she was a very important queen, so certainly the prime minister was also a very important person. And somebody went to see the prime minister. And they waited because the prime minister was busy. They waited for an hour. And finally they got impatient. The secretary was away. So they went right into the room of Lord Gladstone. And there he was on his hands and knees playing horsey. And his grandson was riding. Giddy up, horsey. And he was laughing because he was busy. I'm sorry, you have to wait. So this is the prime minister of Queen Victoria's government being horsey. Very dignified, you know, British, proper. Horsey. So that's the intimacy similarly with Krishna where he can do like that. And it's bewildering. I think I can share this. There are two god brothers who used to speak with one another in such a way, it was painful for me. It was Trivikram Maharaj and Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami is now deceased or returned to Krishna. But Sridhar Swami and Trivikram Swami, because we would sometimes be together, the three of us, and they would speak with each other like shocking ways, like, you know, insult and then insult and then insult and insult and Maharajas. Neither of them meant it as an insult. It was just their playful way of associating with one another. Like, you know. And they would do it consistently. Like every time we got together, we would sit down and take prasadam, and when we're taking prasadam, you know, they'd like say insulting things about one another. So I'm leaving, I can't handle this. They said, no, it's okay, this is just, we're having fun. Okay. I don't want to enter into that fun. Don't want to go there. So it's okay. You don't have to go there. We're having fun. And we've been doing this for years. We just like, we have deep such affection for one another when speaking like this. It's just fun. Okay. You know, I could enter into that mood because of not having the same intimacy that they have had over the years and years and years together, associating. And of course they have their particular natures, and neither of their natures is vicious or hurtful or mean-spirited. And they have great affection and appreciation for one another, so they can do like that. For Kunti, not just these features of contradiction, that he who is feared, but Krishna would also, not only the devotee would become bewildered, but Krishna would become bewildered. He who is feared by fear personified, that's Krishna, becomes afraid by a little stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. Not that the play acting, playing horsey, or wrestling with his son, now he's lying on the floor and he's defeated by his son. Not like that, but afraid. So much afraid that there were tears in his eyes. Not crocodile pretend tears, but genuine tears streaming down his face in fear of this stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. Queen Kunti said, "This bewilders me." But at the same time, as soon as Krishna was bound by Mother Jasoda, immediately, okay, there's those twin Arjuna trees, Lord Brahma made a promise that, Narada made a promise that they would be delivered by me. Okay, now I have to uphold the word of Narada. Just like that. Moving freely between bewildered and crying and being bound by Mother Jasoda and then delivering two trees. And it's an exhibition of Krishna's perfectness. It's not he must be the majestic Lord. He is the majestic Lord. And part of his majesty is his intimacy, or part of his perfectness is his intimacy. Because the Lord is all powerful, it is possible for him to adjust opposites, such as birth and no birth, power and defeat, fear and fearlessness. A pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to adjust opposite things. But he laments for the non-devotees who, not knowing the supreme glories of the Lord, think of him as imaginary, simply because there are so many apparently contradictory statements in scriptures. Actually, there's nothing contradictory. Everything is possible when we understand the Lord as the Lord and not one of us with all our imperfection. So this is a hint from Prabhupada's purport why he's feeling distress. He's feeling distress that worldly people can't understand, and therefore they criticize him or take him as ordinary because he becomes afraid and he goes and hides in Braja incognito, and then he goes back to Mathura. Of course, he killed Kamsa. And then he's running from Kalyavana. And then he flees after Jarasandha, chases him up a mountain. He jumps down a mountain and then goes to Dwarka as if hiding from Jarasandha, so Jarasandha can say, "Ha ha, I've defeated that puny Krishna." Powerful, come Jarasandha. So ordinary people will consider like that. Yes, Krishna was defeated by Jarasandha. How was he the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He ran from him. Coward. Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Sanskrit words are kedayati, mam kedayati, etat ajasya. So kedayati means gives me distress, and then dunoti, it next verse, it gives me pain. So now a little bit about Krishna. After he returned to, he fled, now he's returning, and he's coming before his mother and father, begging forgiveness from Vasudeva. Begging forgiveness from Vasudeva that I was unable to serve you. Please forgive us. Please forgive us. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart. So now Prabhupada's purport. It appears that Lord Krishna and Baladev were both greatly afraid of Kamsa, and therefore they had to hide themselves. But if Lord Krishna and Baladev are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how is it possible that they were afraid of Kamsa? Is there any contradiction in such statements? Vasudev, due to his great appreciation for Krishna, wanted to, so now that's the Krishna's, that's the frame of the doubt. Now here's Vasudev. So Krishna's responding to his father. Here's his father. His father is thinking, I have to give my son protection. He never thought that Krishna was the Supreme Lord and could protect himself. Although, like Vasudev, like Uddhava, Krishna showed him. Look at this, four arms. I'm not your son. I'm the Supreme Personality. I've appeared this way just so that you would know I'm not your son. Now you've asked me to assume a small childlike form. Okay, I'll assume a small childlike form, but I'm the Supreme Person. So he assumed the childlike form. Krishna's Yogamaya covered Vasudev, and he completely forgot that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's carrying him across the river for protection from Kamsa, because he's his father. And Kamsa's very powerful. It's a contradiction. But the contradiction is resolved by Krishna's expanding his Yogamaya potencies. Then it's not a contradiction at all. It's a loving mood. Because Vasudeva was a great devotee of the Lord, he did not like to think that Krishna might be killed like his other children. Now here's another very important dimension that often doesn't get pronounced or given, like, you know, an elevated consideration, but consider. Like Yudhisthira, who would never tell a lie, Vasudeva was that kind of a person. That was so much of his character that when Vasudeva promised to Kamsa, I'll give you all of my children as soon as they're born, I promise you. Kamsa was so convinced that this is his character, if he gives this promise, it will happen. Well, guess what? Vasudev broke his promise. Whoa. And it wasn't even that Krishna told him, you know, say Ashwatthama is dead. It was, he just did it. He didn't deliver his eighth. Although the first six children he delivered, knowing that they would be killed, and they were killed, and one by one he delivered them. Now here's Krishna. He broke his promise. He didn't deliver to Kamsa. Vasudev, morally, was bound to deliver Krishna to the hand of Kamsa because he had promised to turn over all his children. But out of his great love for Krishna, he broke his promise. And the Lord is very pleased with Vasudev for his transcendental mentality. It's not like, okay, tell lies, it's transcendental. And Krishna will be pleased. Just go tell, you know, left and right, this lie, that lie. Krishna will be very pleased. See? Krishna was pleased by Vasudev. All I'm doing is following the example of Yajaraja Rati Shrestha. But it's very specific. Krishna gave the instruction, please take me. He was very happy to take Krishna away from wicked Kamsa, because Krishna had pastimes to perform, but he was also showing the greatness of Vasudev. What was another intention? Krishna didn't want to disturb the intense affection of Vasudev. Vasudev, who already knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead, by Yogamaya potency forgot that Krishna was the personality of Godhead and was thinking of him as his son, so Krishna didn't want to disturb that affection. Krishna reciprocates with the love of his devotees, but he's also, by his Yogamaya potency, influencing the type of love, not the intensity of love, but the type of love. First, I'm the personality of Godhead. Now I'm not. I'm your son. Then it happened later. Later is described in the later chapters of the 10th canto, after Krishna killed Kamsa. Wicked Kamsa was killed. Krishna just sako and finished. Wicked Kamsa is dead. And Krishna, just to convince the people in the arena that Kamsa was dead, he grabbed him by the hair and dragged him like an animal here and there throughout the arena. Kamsa's not just unconscious, he's dead. So they were very jubilant. Then Krishna and Balaram, they went to the prison house where Vasudeva and Devaki were imprisoned. And they stood before Vasudeva and Devaki in the mood, because it was Krishna's mood, you're my mother, you're my father, just like we're hearing, please forgive us for not serving you properly. Vasudeva and Devaki, he's the personality of God. He just killed Kamsa. Who can do this but the Supreme Personality of Godhead? They were in awe and reverence. But Krishna wanted to be embraced by his mother and father. So Krishna covered them with his Yogamaya potency, and they forgot that he's the personality of Godhead, and they embraced him. Just like that. Just like that. Krishna's energies act fully under his control. He can, you know, extend his energies and withdraw his energies at his will. He doesn't even have to, like, lift a little pinky. He didn't have to lift Govardhan Hill with his little pinky. He could just lift Govardhan Hill without even touching Govardhan Hill. But he wanted to give pleasure to Govardhan Hill, so he lifted with his little pinky. Krishna can move his energies as he likes. And besides his material energies, his spiritual energies, fully, fully under his control and direction. So Krishna didn't want to disturb the feelings, the fatherly affection, transcendental fatherly affection of Vasudev. And so he permitted himself, or he made the arrangement to appear to Vasudev to be a small child and very much needing his father's protection, because his father was in Vatsalya Rasa, parental affection. So Krishna agreed to be carried by his father to the house of Nanda and Yashoda. And just to test the intense love of Vasudeva, Lord Krishna fell down into the waters of the Yamuna while his father was crossing the river. Vasudeva became mad after his child as he tried to recover him in the midst of the rising river. Oh, my small child. He's the personality of Godhead. Doesn't need Vasudeva to find him or protect him from anything, but to examine the love and intensify the love of Vasudeva, Krishna slipped from his hand, fell into the river. Oh, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? These are all glorified pastimes of the Lord, and there is no contradiction in such manifestations. Since Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he was never afraid of Kamsa. But to please his father, he agreed to be so. So not just like even play acting, like playing horsey, but being afraid of Kamsa to please his father. So he's Bhakta Vatsala. This is one of Krishna's names. He's very affectionate upon his affectionate devotees, and he reciprocates with their affection for him. Universally, not only the devotees, but the non-devotees, he reciprocates with their affection or absence of affection, their regard for Krishna. This is Krishna. He's so, especially with those devotees who are very affectionate toward Krishna, he's very affectionate towards them. And it's variegated. So they have different feelings, and Krishna has different feelings, and that's part of rasa. Isn't this nice? This is like giving us an inside picture of the heart of a pure devotee and the heart of Krishna, how he regards his pure devotee, and how he moves his energies this way, that way, in order to accommodate the love of his pure devotees. The Lord, whose lotus feet are worshipped by demigods like Brahma and Shiva, wanted to worship the feet of Vasudeva. Another contradiction, or apparent. It's not a contradiction, it's affection. And it's his affection for his father's affection. He who has no father has affection for one who has affection for him as a father. So the reconciliation of this is, everything is possible when we understand the Lord as the Lord and not one of us, with all our imperfection. So this is, it's a deep mystery. It's one thing, you know, that God exists. It's another thing, the majesty of God. Now, how do you reconcile the majesty of God with the intimacy of the majesty of God? He who is the supremely powerful becomes defeated. One of my God brothers used to like to repeat again and again a passage from Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, where Sridham, one of the cowherd boys, after defeating Krishna in a wrestling match, and Krishna had to carry him on his shoulders because Krishna was defeated, so the winning party was on the shoulders, and they'd go marching through the forest and give him a piggyback ride. And Sri Dham would call down to Krishna, what kind of big man are you? You're easily defeated. And Krishna would like that, taunting. Yes, you're right. You're more powerful than me. But I like giving you a ride. This intimacy of Vrindavan is unknown in Vaikuntha. It would be like totally out of place in Vaikuntha. And for this material world, it's inconceivable or simply storybook, mythology. So Vrindavan is very elevated, very, very intimate in the science of love, of loving relationships. And then the last part in the purport, Prabhupada is presenting the position of Krishna acting not only for enjoyment and for reciprocating with the love of his devotee, but Krishna being very expert, he's doing many things at one time. He's giving instruction. How, even if you're the personality of Godhead, doesn't matter who you are, you offer respect to your parents. In any culture of the world, this is a principle. Honor thy parents, and, or something like that, from the biblical language. But it's just, it's a principle. And not just parents, but those who are elderly. I was spending some time, won't go into the detail, but spending some time recently on this topic with some devotees who are elderly, and they feel uncomfortable receiving respect from others. And I was cautioning them, if you think the respect is unto you, then there's reason to not wish others to offer you respect, but it's not unto you. It's a cultural principle. You just send that respect to those who trained you in Krishna consciousness. But your receiving is not for yourself, it's helping those who are younger or newer or whatever to offer respect, because our culture is a culture of respect. And one of the ways where respect goes is to those who are elderly. And by your acting in that way, not like unto you, but in principle, respect the elderly, those who are senior persons, then you're showing by example when those persons become elderly how they can act with those who are younger, so that they can, not unto you. If the false ego issue is where, oh, they're respecting me. Oh, how nice. I feel good because I'm getting respect. That kind of ego is wrong. So if we're acting in false ego, either let me offer respect because then I'll get something, or I'm receiving respect so now I'm getting something. Ego and pride within an individual or within society breaks down all good things. But without ego, to offer respect and to receive on behalf of the disciplic succession, or receive on behalf of those who have given one Krishna consciousness, it's not unto you, but it goes to those persons. The respect goes to those persons. Because before association with those persons, I was a wretch. I was a little sniveling speck of nothingness somewhere in the universe, lost and bewildered in darkness. Their mercy has somehow come into my life, so anything that's coming is respect, it's for them. Immediately it just gets transparently passed. But it helps one to enter into the culture of respect, because without respect, how can you have even relationships? What to speak of loving relationships? You don't have relationships. You have maybe some officialdom, where people are polite to each other because, you know, they don't want to be nasty to each other, so it's better to be not nasty, just, you know, formality. But to enter into the feelings of loving relationships, or even having a relationship, there has to be respect. You know, whatever it is, husband and wife, parents and children, friend and friend, whatever the relationship is. Without respect, you don't have relationship. Without relationship, you can't have love. And without love, it's miserable. It's hellish. It's material existence, where people don't have relationships. They have business dealings with one another. You give me this, and I give you that. You don't give me this, forget it. I'm going elsewhere. I'll find another supplier. And always bargaining over, you know, how much I give and how much I receive. So Krishna was teaching respect to his father. Just like Krishna taking Sandipani Muni as a spiritual master. Krishna doesn't need a spiritual master, but he's showing by example. Not only he went to school and accepted Sandipani Muni as a teacher, he served him in any humble way. And he was very happy to be in that serving along with Sudama, serving Sandipani Muni. And Sandipani Muni was so indebted to Krishna and Sudama for that mood of service. So he poured his blessings upon them. Krishna doesn't need someone to pour blessings upon him, but it's the loving reciprocation that Krishna wants. So there's no need from Krishna's side for anything, like we were discussing yesterday evening. Patram, pushpam, pavam, toyam. What does Krishna need of a leaf? That's silly. How many leaves are there in the creation of God? Krishna doesn't need a leaf, or fruit, or a flower, or some water. It's the loving gesture. So the benefit goes to the person that's making the offering. And that's why Krishna asks for offerings. Not because he needs some offerings. He's hungry, or he's egotistical. He needs people to like bow down and say nice things about him. Otherwise he goes and pouts. Nobody likes me. That's not Krishna. It's his affection. So he invites for the benefit of those who make the offerings. So Krishna is doing like that by example. There's some nice things that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. I think I've used up my time, so carry on. Any discussion? Questions? Yes?
I would like a quick clarification. So oftentimes I've heard how consciousness behind activity is more important than that. For example, if you look at, in order to encourage someone, is it okay to lie? Not lie as in that's you did a really good job or something. Just to keep the person, motivated and, because at that point in time, if you tell them that, what you did is really bad or something, they would probably be, become complacent or something. They won't, become dejected or something.
Well, let me ask you a question to respond to your question. Is your idea that even they did a really crummy job, just to encourage them, you say, you did a really great job. Well, like that?
Oh, not like really bad, but it's like mediocre, and you're just like, you know, you, well, I mean, you tell them it's really
good. Okay,
and then
that's,
you,
fine. Yeah. That's fine. Okay. That's fine. I'll several things. It's important to encourage people. It's also important to be honest when you encourage people, because if you're, you know, it's not genuine, honest appreciation, you know, then it's something else. It's phony, and then, you know, your words become dismissed because it's phony, and you become dismissed because you're a phony. So that's not good, to have people think that, like that towards one another. So whatever that you say should be genuine. But, you know, it's another principle of human interaction. Rather than looking for faults, you know, there's a saying about leadership, catch people doing things right, and then honor them. Wow. You know, something. Even it's a little something, but you notice it and you let them know. There's this chain letter thing going around presently about the blue ribbon. You know, a teacher in New York schools got this idea that she wanted, you know, you're special to me, and you wanted to honor someone for doing so. So she tried it with her students. And they were, whoa, no one has recognized me. So then she got this second idea that here's three ribbons. You find somebody that has, you know, made, that's meaningful in your life, and you present the ribbon to them and give them two other ribbons and say, you can, now if you are moved, you can give this to somebody else, and then somebody else gave to somebody else. Kind of like, you know, the chain. And it, you know, really made a big difference in the relationships of somebody with his son. At the end of the story is the father gave his, that, you know, that the worker gave to his boss a ribbon. And then the father thought, gee, you know, maybe I should give one to my son. And he sat down with his son to give his son a ribbon. And his son started crying and crying and crying right in front of him. Just broke down. And he said, you know, I wrote a suicide note. This is the chain thing that's going around. Apparently it's a true story, because you have pictures of people and stuff. And it's in my room. And this tonight, after you and Mom were taking rest, I was going to kill myself. And here's the letter, because I felt you just didn't care. That was one of these tear-jerking things that just show that you care and can make a big difference in people's life. But when it's genuine, then it means something. When it's, you know, phony, then it's the opposite. You don't care. There's another thing that, you know, this is personal, but appreciation should be carefully reposed, because someone can just become proud or like addicted to seeking recognition. So one of the things that I've thought about this a lot, I generally don't comment on the prasadam that's prepared, although I know the person that's preparing prasadam, it's a big deal that, you know, preparing prasadam. I hope Maharaj likes it. Can you find out if he liked it? So, I don't know. I didn't see what kind of prasadam you had yesterday afternoon, but I imagine it was like this whole big thing, because Pallavi likes to cook and likes to make nice prasadam. When I eat in their home, it's like 51 things. So, you know, she's an expert cook, but the first thing I ate yesterday was oversalted. The Karela was like eating, you know, a spoonful of salt. So I didn't say, oh, you know, wonderful cooking. Nor did I say, oh, the Kerala was horrible. Too much salt. Go ahead, try it. Just too much salt. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything. Just being, you know, myself. But she knows that I appreciate the endeavor that she makes. It's like this humongous endeavor for cooking. She just enjoys it. And I enjoy that she enjoys it. Besides, she is an expert cook. But more than she's an expert cook, she enjoys this nice service. Now, sometimes you don't say anything, but you can show your appreciation in other ways at other times, rather than that particular thing that may get them puffed up. Oh, I'm a good cook. Maharaj likes my cooking. It has to be carefully placed. And I'll add one other thing. Just last night, before taking rest, I received a letter from one of my godbrothers. I won't mention his name, but you know, he was appreciating my service. And he's I look upon him as a very elevated personality, because he is. And he was appreciating my service, and I was, part of my response was, our culture, Vaishnava culture within ISKCON, should be more of that. And you're an exemplar, because here you are doing this. And one of the things that I did as the GBC chairman, to like not just say that to one person in an isolated circumstance, but deliberately, I, in the course of the year, made arrangements where we presented letters of appreciation to devotees for their wonderful service on behalf of the executive committee. It was, you know, a personal idea that I think our leadership, or in general our culture, should be extending appreciation and recognition to the devotees. And for the benefit of all of you, one of those letters was to Anuttama and Rukmini, and it was presented at our GBC meeting, and during the closing parts we had a two-page letter that we all signed, and the person that was the MC read it out, and Anuttama was crying at the end. You know, Mr. Communications Minister was crying. Yeah. So he had to speak, and he could hardly speak. He was emotionally moved. And later he told me, look, you don't have to tell me where this all came from, but, you know, it was amazing. I was not expecting this at all. It was at the very end. It was like an appreciation session of our meeting. So I think I've responded to your question. It's part of our culture when we're acting in a cultured way. But let it be genuine, carefully considered. Is it going to have the right kind of an effect? And, you know, look within your heart. Is it something that you genuinely feel? Yes?
I have two questions.
Two questions. I hope I can hear them.
I wanted to clarify that Maharaj, like Mahavishnu glances at Pradhan. Then you said yesterday that Chaya Devi has a lot of sense, so he gives service to her. And also, I want, is it Chaya Devi and the where, like, Krishna's sister, Shiva, like, Yashoda Mata gives birth to a child, girl, and different because I saw the picture yesterday that it's like a Durga Devi, only the Chaya Devi that you showed on the PowerPoint.
Okay.
Is there any difference?
When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, the advent of Lord Krishna, Krishna tells Yogamaya that after Kamsa tries to kill you, he won't be able to kill you, don't worry. And you'll then be present throughout the land, known by different names. Right? So those are names of Durga, according to location. It's like a time of Durga Puja. In Bengal, it's Durga Puja, but it's known by other names in other parts of India. And it's the same Devi that they're worshipping, known by different names. So it's the same Durga, who is Chaya Devi. It's another name. And Chaya Devi is indicating a particular aspect of her, that she, Chaya Devi, is a Chaya, she is a reflection of Rama Devi. So the internal potency of Mahavishnu is Rama Devi, and her reflection is Chaya Devi. Or we could say Durga, he glanced over Durga. It's indicating a particular aspect of her. She's a reflection of the internal potency of Mahavishnu. So he's glancing at the reflection of his internal potency and wants to give her some service. So it's the same individual, given different names according to the relationship. Just like Krishna has so many names, he's one personality, according to the relationship, one identifies him by a name. Is that all right?
So when I like somebody criticizes me, suppose if somebody criticizes me, then one way I take it as like something that Krishna want to teach me, then I accept it. But one way that I also think that the person who is criticizing me, if it is like, it is not like in a proper way, like even though I'm doing something and still I'm getting that, so I just wanted to clarify, this is not the way, this is the way that I'm thinking. So by myself, I think that if I don't do that, then that person will be keep on going to do the same criticism. So how I'm helping him to develop his consciousness. So to develop that consciousness, it's not like that he's criticizing me or something, or the other person is criticizing me or something like that. But just to help him to improve his consciousness also,
three things. Every circumstance is different. So if you want a cookie cutter answer, you're not going to get one from me, because each circumstance is different. Second point is that there is some instruction. It may not be what the person is saying is your instruction. Maybe something behind what that person is saying, or that somewhere over there, like, in my past, there's something that is bringing or prompting this display. It may not be at all related to what the person is speaking. It may be related to something in the past, and it's just a deserve that I'm receiving for some unknown past thing. So it can make one humble by thinking in that way. And it may, just still on the second point, it may be not even connected to something in the past, just the nature of being in the material world where there is duality. There's light and there's dark. There's hot and there's cold. There's pleasure, there's pain. There's honor, there's dishonor. It's the nature of the place. And therefore, you don't react to it, but just acknowledge this is the nature of the place. It has really nothing to do with perhaps something back there or you know, some any other lesson than the lesson that this is a place of duality. Not a place of absolutes. It doesn't have any absolute meaning, just other than this is a place of duality. And a third thing is, before you respond in any way, whether it's speak something or don't speak something, the mood to adopt is the mood that you expressed. How can I be of service to Krishna and this person in this situation? What's appropriate? What's the best way to serve Krishna and this person? Not how I can best defense myself, but how to best serve the person. And then with that contemplation, it leads you into the particulars. But if you maintain that position of service, then it may very well be, but not necessarily, the in service to the person, an appropriate response or the best appropriate response for the best response for this particular circumstance is clarifying. Particularly if the person is reasonable. Now, if the person is unreasonable, you may choose a different response. But if they're reasonable, offer some clarification. An excellent example of this that Krishna gave was when Satrajit falsely accused Krishna, stealing the Shambhataka jewel and killing Prasena, his brother. So what did Krishna do? He considered first, what's the best way to serve this person, Satrajit, and for the benefit of the residents of Dwarka, that they not have the doubt in their mind, well, maybe Krishna did this bad thing. So he didn't confront Satrajit and, you know, educate him. No, it's not true. What you say is not true. He chose another path of establishing the truth. And when the truth became established, that stain or the false accusation was removed. And Krishna returned the Shambhataka jewel. And then Prasena was in a fix, because he knew people are going to not like the fact that I was saying false things about Krishna. I'm going to, you know, the Yadus might retaliate. In fact, they did. I better do something. So he was now thinking, let me do the right thing to amend for my wrong thing, which inspired him to give the Shambhataka jewel and his daughter to Krishna. And Krishna gave back the jewel, knowing that he didn't really want to give the jewel to Krishna. That change hadn't taken place. It was more, you know, protect his backside than it was wanting to give Krishna, wanting to really make amends. You keep the jewel. I'll accept your daughter. Okay? Yes.
Oh, no, right. when dealing with the family members, especially for my mother, like because of her condition right now, I received a wonderful instruction from my mentors that we need to give disciplic succession love. And I was trying, she was seeing me kind of differently and not willing to accept any service from me. But when natural, what I was trying to think is like somehow I was missing that natural connection as a son to her. So where did I go wrong?
I don't know. Whatever the answer to that question is, what you can do is continue to follow through on this nice advice that you were given. And whether there's reciprocation or not is not under your control. It's her free will to do that or not. But know for certain that spiritual benefit will go to your mother, whether she externally says, you know, thank you, or externally she says, no thank you. Spiritual benefit will go to her. Simply from your well-wishing, what to speak of whatever undertaking or practical activity you extend. Yes. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I have the same question on that Durga. That's what I understood was Durga is the energy of Mahavishnu. So what's the status of Durga compared to Shiva, Lord Shiva and
Lord Shiva is she is the consort of Lord Shiva, and she is the external, she's the reflection of Mahavishnu's consort. And they're not contradictions.
And like, is she pleased when like people pray, like worship Durga? Like I've seen people, they say they are deeply in love. We see their worship, there is like loving worship towards Durga. Is she pleased with those that worship or something?
Well, it's very much like Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has his followers, and there are those that understand Lord Shiva as a great Vaishnava. You understand the distinction? There are persons that don't understand Lord Vishnu in relation, those that don't understand Lord Shiva in relation to Lord Vishnu. They just worship Lord Shiva because he's Ashutosh. He very quickly is pleased and supplies what one wants, and you know, they're very happy to worship Lord Shiva. He has those kinds of followers, but he also has those that see him as a dearmost representative of the Supreme Lord. And they learn from him how to worship Vishnu. So those are two different kinds of relationships. And is Lord Shiva pleased? We could say he's pleased, those who worship him. He's more pleased when they grow in their mood of worship to understand his worship of Vishnu. We'll give another example. It's in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, where Narada is the son of Brahma, and he has enormous respect for his father. But when he sees Brahma meditating, he asks him, upon whom are you meditating? Are you not supreme? You've created everything, and you're the father of all of the creation. Is there someone greater than you? So he learns from his father, yes. Lord Vishnu. He is my father. Oh. So you're not the source of everything. No, I'm not the source. And he describes. So Narada's prior regard for Lord Brahma becomes elevated to even a greater appreciation for Lord Brahma and his worship of Lord Vishnu. Does that help? Same with Durga. Some may just worship Durga and some may understand. Just like in Brahma Samhita, there's a whole verse of prayers to Govinda where Durga is identified and she's honored because of her position in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and her service unto Him. Srishti stati pralaya sadhana shakya eka shayeva yasha bhavanani vivarti Durga. But chaya is also in that verse. She's the reflection of the Lord's internal energy. And she's the wife or consort of Lord Shiva. Okay. You have a question?
Maharaj, the question I have is, as we see in the planet Earth here, as we are human beings and serving the Lord in different ways, like cooking and doing other activities, preaching and all those things in dynamic ways. So we also learn from the scripture that we have position in spiritual world, which may be a tree or a flower or something like that. So how do we understand that, you know, in that form we'll be like blissful, happy, and then serving Lord in different ways?
Whatever our constitutional position of service to Krishna is in the spiritual realm is a perfectly natural and perfectly complete experience of offering service unto Krishna. Whatever that is, it's complete and natural. So there's no, the converse is, there's no sense of incompleteness. It's service in a particular mood, in a particular manner, whatever that may be. And the satisfaction is full. It's not that, you know, the flower or tree, as you gave the example, or the cowherd boy, or the assistant to Mother Jasoda is thinking, well, this is a nice service, but I'd really like... They're not coveting the service of someone else. They're fully satisfied. In a constitutional, perfectly natural way. It's perfect and complete. And there's variegatedness, which makes up the satisfaction of Krishna. The existence of every part and the whole of the spiritual realm is for the satisfaction of Krishna. So one is very satisfied with their part in pleasing Krishna, in the whole picture of pleasing Krishna. There's no envy, there's no jealousy, there's fullness and satisfaction, whatever that may be, whatever one's constitutional position of service to Krishna is. Is that all right?
Maharaj, thank you very much. In Bhagavad Gita, actually in 12th chapter under the process of knowledge, when talking about under the quality of truth, Prabhupada writes how like the truth should be spoken palatably. And again in the 16th chapter under the divine and demoniac qualities, it's being said how the truth shouldn't be distorted, it should be spoken as it is, and how one shouldn't hesitate to call a thief. And I'm just thinking, like, how like both could be done? How truth could be spoken back? Because if the truth is very unpleasant, how it's possible?
It's an art, isn't it? How to become an artist? It's an art. It's that by practice at art, you can become a good artist. And until you practice at art, it's kind of like crummy. But you're trying. Because you're practicing art. And it's good if you have an art teacher too. Okay. Someone else had their hand up?
Yeah. This is regarding Brahma and Shiva. We know, I know, man, there are several Brahmas are there. And Shiva's person is higher than Brahma because he is an expansion of Vishnu himself. Are there several Shivas also like Brahmas?
There's several expansions or features of Shiva, and they're known by different names. You know, it's very complex. So I'm not going to go into the complexity of the very complex topic. But starting with Sadashiva, and at the bottom is Rudra, and there's so many in between. There are aspects of Lord Shiva that are, all of whom are in a mood of serving the Supreme Lord, and there are different ways in which Lord Shiva serves the Supreme Lord, and there are different names according to those different positions. But they're all auspicious, Shiva. 11 Rudras that reside in the lower regions of creation, and Sadashiva, and they destroy the universe with their terrible dance. And Sadashiva is in the spiritual realm, and so forth, and there are different realms. There's Shivaloka, there's Kailash, and there are different persons, different features, and they have different residences, and it's very complex. But it's not exactly like different Brahmas, because Brahma is one function, and that he's the chief engineer or architect of the universe. It's the same thing in each universe. It's one program. And there's different universes, so there are different Brahmas for the different universes.
But every universe that supports Shiva is not like that. Even though there are expansions, but they are
not. It's not the same as Lord Brahma, that's for sure. Someone else had their hand up. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for class. And before coming to Krishna consciousness, I believe Lord Shiva and Brahma and Vishnu are three gods. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call demigods. Mm-hmm. Just now we're calling Lord Shiva also. Mm-hmm. Why it is like that? Sometimes.
It's a distinction between Ishvara Parama and Ishvara. So Ishvara Parama is he from whom all other Ishwaras derive their Ishvara capacity. That's Ishvara Parama, and there's only one. And all others are deriving their Ishvara capacity from that one. So Lord Shiva is deriving his capacity from Lord Vishnu. Ask him. He'll tell you. It's written in the Bhagavatam precisely like that. Therefore, demigod, his power is coming from some source. But in the case of Ishvara Parama, his power isn't coming from some other source. He's the source of all others' power, and he's the source of his own power. He's the supreme powerful, supreme controller. Anyone else is in this other category. And there are gradations, just as we just heard. We shouldn't compare the powerful demigods with any of us. Similarly, we shouldn't compare the powerful demigods with Ishvara Parama. They're not the same. In category. They're different tattvas, different positions or of truth. And Vishnu tattva is in a separate category. Although the three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Mahesh, they're in charge of the modes of nature, therefore they're worshipped in that way. Or they're respected in that way. But they're not in an equal position. Two are in Ekala Ishvara Krishna arasava pritya. Eka, ekala Ishwara Krishna, ara sabhavritya. All others are servants of the one. Or in the language of the Upanishads, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. The second one is plural. Amongst eternals, there's many, there's one supreme eternal. Amongst conscious beings, there's one supremely conscious being amongst the many conscious beings. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman, Kena Upanishad. That one is the maintainer of the necessities of all the others. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman, that the desires or needs of the many, bahunam, are being supplied by the one. And Lord Shiva is in the category of many, he's not in the category of the one that's supplying the necessities of all. Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.
His Holiness Shiva Rupa Maharaj ki jai.